Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Monday, the 9th of August. Before you went to college, what advice did you receive that you thought was extremely important and fared well for you when you were in college? What do you wish somebody had told you before you started college? What mistakes did you make? What did you do that was really smart, either as a parent or as a student? This hour of the program, it's the time of year when many young people are heading off to college for the very first time, and it's a time of deep transition for parents and, of course, for those who are going to school as well. All of a sudden, I remember when I went to college, the tremendous freedom that you have and how difficult it first it is to regulate yourself in terms of getting the papers done on time, not staying up until 4 o'clock in the morning, the drugs that may be around, alcohol that may be around, making sure that there's so much fun to be had, just having long conversations in the union. How do you make sure that the work is done and you become, as most of us hope that we will or had or wish that we had when we were in college, actively engaged in a life of the mind? How much should parents know about the grades their children are receiving? And how do you, as a student, give your all to the 4 years or beyond that are ahead of you? This hour of the program, we're going to be talking about all of that, and our guest is Joe Abhold. Joe is director of the University Counseling Center at the University of Wisconsin in Oshkosh. He is a licensed clinical psychologist. His areas of interest include substance abuse, crisis and trauma, sexual assault, suicide prevention, depression, and anxiety. And he is committed to understanding the developmental issues faced by college students, enhancing campus culture and student success and retention. He does a significant amount of training and consultation on violence prevention, substance abuse issues, and prevention. And he obtained his undergraduate degree from UW Oshkosh, master's and PhD in clinical psychology at the University of Arkansas. He spent 6 years as an assistant director at the Counseling Center at Ball State University in Muncie, Indiana. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Joe. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you'd like to send an email, you're ever so welcome to do that. The email address is talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. Hello, Joe. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good morning, Kathleen.
Yeah, very nice to have you on the air. Well, a lot of parents and students, for the first time going to college, are facing a little bit of anxiety, although nobody will admit to that. I'm sure parents are trying really cool about the whole thing. And students are saying, nervous? No, I'm not nervous. I'm looking forward to it. And yet you know that everybody's just a little bit anxious.
Right. As soon as those back-to-school ads come out in the newspaper, I think people start to get a little bit nervous that time to go back to school.
Yeah. It's such a transition, isn't it? Because for a student, you're transitioning to deciding who you're going to be as a human being and an adult. And for parents, it's hard because for the most part, your students are gone. They're out of the home. You've completed 18 years, and it's a significant time of transition.
Really, it's a big transition for everyone. Whether the college student themselves is 18 or 38 or 58, there's a big transition going on in their life. And then, of course, for parents of traditional age students, it's a big transition for them, because they have all of the hopes and fears of what that student might achieve or accomplish, and then all this just this big change in life. It's another sort of developmental phase in their whole family.
Mm-hmm. You thought we ought to concentrate, and I love these questions, and let me ask this in terms of your advice. What do you wish, Joe, somebody had told you before you first started college?
Well, I think probably the best advice I really got was to get involved. And you know, we can see that. I can see that in students here. The students who get involved really tend to do better than the ones who, you know, just sort of stay in their rooms and go to class and don't really get involved in the life of the campus. Or if they're living off campus, you know, folks commuting from home, that type of thing. If they don't really get engaged in the campus, I think it's much harder to become part of it. So I think to get involved in extracurricular activities and then to really get involved in your classwork. To you know, find a professor that you really like to do some work with, to get an on-campus job, to make friends, to get involved in intramurals, all of those kinds of things will make your experience much more rich. And we also find that it helps to make students more successful academically.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. And there are so many possibilities for getting involved, right? There's a lot to do.
Yeah, if you haven't been on a campus in the last 20 years or so, I think there's been a lot of changes in terms of the opportunities that students have to get involved. Just here at Oshkosh, we have 150 clubs and organizations. We have intramural sports. There's rec and wellness facilities on most of the campuses that are really highly utilized by students. So there's great opportunities to get involved inside and outside of the classroom.
Mm-hmm. I think that parents, I'll bring this up early so we can talk about it now and later if people want to. Parents have a concern that there are going to be a lot of wild parties, Joe, that mm-hmm. alcohol is going to be extremely prevalent, drugs will be prevalent, they'll be so prevalent that students will feel pressure to take all of those and then their lives will be ruined and they'll have to drop out of college and who knows what will become of them. Maybe these are overblown fears, but I'm sure that obviously those kinds of things may not be prevalent, but they're around. So how prevalent are they? I've been out of college for a long, long time, and people smoked dope when I was in college, but there weren't a whole lot of alcohol parties as far as I know, but it was the 60s time, and mm-hmm. there's a lot of turmoil on campuses. Is there that kind of temptation for drugs? How do you deal with that issue?
Well, I think it's really important to talk about this and think about this in sort of a nuanced way. In some ways, it's important to remember that it's not as bad as the myths or the stereotypes or the movies would suggest that it is. You know, sometimes we have this myth that it's nothing but partying all the time. Now, having said that, doesn't mean that we don't have concerns on all college campuses across the nation and as well as particularly here in Wisconsin. So it's not as big as and bad as the myths would suggest, but it's also something that we need to be very aware of and really attend to. So statewide across the UW system, which is what I know the most about, about 30% of students, including those over 21, don't drink at all. Hmm. Okay, so 30% non-drinkers. About of the remaining 70%, the majority of those drink five times a month or less, so about once a week, mm-hmm. and on average they drink about six drinks a week. So the majority are drinking not at all or infrequently and pretty responsibly. What we're left with then is a minority, a fairly significant minority, that are drinking too much, causing mm-hmm. a lot of trouble and having a lot of problems themselves. So we have to think about that. We have to remember not everyone is drinking, but if you want to go to any college campus and find opportunities to drink and go to parties, you're definitely going to find them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it's important for incoming students to think about that, and it's important for parents to think about that as well and have conversations with your students about those issues.
And how do you deal with that issue at the University of Wisconsin? How do you deal with that in your job? Do you make certain that students know that there's a place that they can go if they have substance abuse issues?
Yes, we do provide services for students who's experiencing problems with substance abuse. We try to really, I think, approach it, and all campuses, I think, try to approach it sort of from two ends. We try to provide as many opportunities for positive involvement and fun and those kinds of things so students have lots of alternatives and options. And on the other hand, we also utilize enforcement. We're not in an environment with thousands of underage drinkers or thousands of underage people on a college campus to sort of look the other way to underage drinking.
Right.
So campuses are really serious about enforcement. And I think that's something that when I talk to parents of incoming college students, sometimes I think they're surprised because that may be a very big difference between now and 20 or 25 years ago when people, who are parents now were in college. Enforcement is very significant and pretty stringent. So underage drinking tickets and sanctions on campus and those kinds of things that require students to follow up and participate in educational groups and that type of thing are fairly common. So if a student is going to go out and drink alcohol in a manner that calls them to the attention of the of their campus, chances are there's a pretty good chance they're going to get in trouble for that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of approaching it from both sides, I think, is important.
Do people who are entering college, Joe, have a difficult time? I know this was difficult for me in college, was regulating my time for whatever reason, getting those papers done before 3 o'clock in the morning, the night before that they were due, making sure that I got up for those early morning classes. There was just a whole lot of freedom. And maybe we need to do a better job with high school students and having them take on more of that freedom. What about regulating yourself?
It's really interesting. I just saw results from a survey we did, and we looked at writing ability and math ability and what students predicted their abilities or their issues were, the causes of their grade performance, if their grade performance was not so good. And the most powerful factors on that assessment were the ability to regulate your time and doing your work before play. So ability is one thing, but focus and goal setting and really paying attention to the task at hand are significant factors in academic success. So while we want students to get involved in positive things, it's also very important for them to do things like set goals, to have a planner, to regulate how they're using their time. Because it's really easy, I think, in college to lose several hours because you have this downtime between classes and those kinds of things. And if you don't use that time well, you're really not spending enough time on task.
When you started school and you started at the University of Wisconsin-Oshkosh, you must have known that you liked school, or you grew to love it while you were in school because you went on for your master's and PhD. Did you have a clear plan in front of you, and so you were academically and intellectually engaged right off the bat, or can you give some advice to those who may not have been as intellectually engaged?
Well, I'm sort of the poster boy for someone who didn't use their high school time very wisely.
Really? Huh.
I think I was always fairly bright, but I didn't pay attention to school. I had a lot of other things that I was interested in doing that had nothing to do with school. So I came to college academically somewhat underprepared and with a history of not really getting involved in positive ways. And so when I came to college, I knew that's not what I wanted to do. I paid for my own college. I was very focused on getting the most out of it. And that's when things really started to change for me. I got involved on campus. I got involved in my residence hall. I became an RA, all of those kinds of things. I got involved in a research program with some faculty in the psychology department. And then I learned, wow, this is really different. I think there's some students who think that they're not that serious about high school. It doesn't feel that real to them. But for me, college was really a different experience. And I really started to get fascinated and started working hard, really, for the first time. And found that it was really interesting.
Does that happen to a lot of students, Joe, that it does click all of a sudden in college? I hear that happens, does it?
Mm-hmm. I think it does. People can surprise you. Sometimes you'll see students with very high ACT scores for whom high school was very easy. They didn't really learn how to manage their time. They didn't learn how to study. They didn't have to study very hard. And they come to college and they think they can sort of run that same approach, and it doesn't turn out very well. On the other hand, there are students who struggle with high school because they have to work harder. But, of course, they're developing some study skills and time management skills. And there's also students who have kind of the attitude of a 17-year-old about school, and they think, well, this is silly, and that kind of thing. And then they come to college, and it turns for them, and they'll end up really surprising you. So it's the students who get involved and invest themselves in their campus and invest themselves in their studies that really get the most out of it.
Mm-hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls and emails. We have quite a few coming in, Joe. Joe Abhold is our guest, director of University Counseling Center at the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh. And our number is 800-486-8655. Our email address is talk@wpr.org. The major question of the hour is how can we help our children, I guess they're still children, they're young adults, successfully make the transition from being at home to going to college. How can we make sure that they're successful? And we'll have advice for parents, too, because I don't think it's any secret. You know that I have a son who's going off to college this fall. And I must confess, and I'm sure that I've heard from some of you via email, so I know that many of you are worried about making the transition to empty nesters. And how do you keep yourself from crying? Or maybe it's okay to do that. We welcome your phone calls. We'll take them in just one moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I wanted to tell you that tomorrow during this hour, another really interesting show, Dr. Connie Mariano will be joining us. She is the author of The White House Doctor, My Patients Were Presidents, a memoir. She became President Clinton's personal physician, and she also was the White House doctor and head of the White House medical unit for George Herbert Walker Bush. So she did everything from applying a Band-Aid to Bush's golf blister to drawing Clinton's blood for Ken Starr during the former president's impeachment. It's a very, very interesting book, and she did this at great sacrifice, too, to her family. So that's coming up tomorrow. Let's go to phone calls. We have many of them. Our first caller is Scott on the interstate. Hi, Scott.
Hi, Kathleen. Welcome back.
Thank you, Scott.
Hey, at the risk of sounding like a real bad example, I had begun my wastrel ways in high school and was only a so-so student and continued that through my first year of college. But I wound up working. I was actually working in a bar right across the street from the University of Colorado, a beer bar, and leading a pretty wasteful life right through college. But I wound up graduating Phi Beta Kappa. And the way I was able to do that in spite of my wicked ways was that I learned very early on, fortunately, that my job, my real job, was to never miss class, take copious notes, and I learned to print real fast so that even I could read my own writing going back. And by doing that, I don't know about anybody else, but it worked for me. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily recommend everybody, become a total bar working degenerate while they're in college. but then again, but certainly, if I were to counsel some young person, unless things have changed a heck of a lot since the late 60s. Oh, yeah, I'm sure they have. But even at that, my guess is that they'd be well advised to make sure they always get to class and write down everything that might even be the slightest bit important, because it'll probably will be.
Thank you. It's so nice to hear from you again, Scott. Joe.
Well, I think that's great advice to go to class and to take good notes. There's also one of the ways that things have changed. A lot of courses have the outlines and PowerPoints and things online, so you can reference those as well after class to make sense out of things. I think it's great advice, and that attending class is something that students will sometimes think, well, I don't need to go to class. They don't take attendance. But a lot of things happen there that, of course, that are very worthwhile. So going to class is great advice.
It sure is. I would imagine it's easier because we live in this age of computers now. You can bring a computer to class and take notes that way, can't you? Which is great.
Yeah, people can take laptops. It works out really well.
Right. Thanks, Scott, so much for your call. Ken is next in Milton. Hi, Ken.
Hello. I'd like to take a new, or not a new, but a perhaps different perspective. And this is from someone that spent 10 years in college. And that is the semi-predatory nature of upperclassmen and how that is being dealt with.
Semi-predatory? What are you talking about?
Well, students that have been around for a while know that every year there's going to be a crop of newbies that don't know the ropes or whatever, and they're taken advantage of. It doesn't amount to hazing, and I went to some reputable moral schools, and it happened there, so it happens everywhere. I mean, these upperclassmen should be monitors and protecting these lower-classmen, but that's not the way human nature works.
This is outside my field of experience in college. Joe, do you know what he's talking about?
Well, I not entirely. There are concerns, legitimate concerns about safety on college campuses. And again, it's one of those things that you have to look at in kind of a nuanced way. Generally, campuses are safer than the communities that surround them. One of the problems in terms of safety on campus is that actually students feel too safe, and they don't do sometimes the simple kinds of things that you need to do to protect yourself from property crime, like locking doors and locking car doors and those kinds of things. So sometimes we find students themselves feel just too safe on campus. There are concerns with there's you know, relationship violence or sexual assault on campus. And those are things that we need to be very aware of, and we spend a lot of time and concentration on educating our student body about safety with respect to those kinds of things. And again, it's something that parents and students need to be aware of. But I don't really think that there's any that I'm aware of sort of hazing or that kind of thing from upper class students.
Mm-hmm. You used to hear that being a part of Greek life on campus, but
It's something that's very, very closely watched.
Right, I'm sure. I am interested in your resume here when you talk about being committed to understanding the developmental issues faced by college students, Joe. What do you mean by that? What are those issues?
Well, a big one is this issue of autonomy that we've been talking about. How do you handle the increased freedom and the increased responsibility that comes with that? How do you internalize essentially what your parents have been trying to do with you, is in terms of, you know, getting you to get up on time and take care of things and, you know, fill out forms and that kind of stuff? How do you really internalize that and become more responsible, progressively more responsible for your own success? One of the things that people are concerned about, I think both parents and people who work in higher education, is that it seems that 18 is still very, very young in terms of how responsible 18-year-olds are sometimes. Sometimes they're very responsible, but other times there's still in a transition that feels very much like adolescence through 18, 19, 20, 25, where there's difficulty achieving that or taking on that responsibility.
Yes.
But it's an important area.
It sure is. It's a very important area, I think. Ken, thank you very much for the call. We go next to Nick in Oshkosh. Hi, Nick.
Hi, Kathleen. How are you doing today?
All right. How are you?
Pretty good. I just wanted to comment on students getting involved on campus. I'm actually set to graduate from UW-Oshkosh this fall.
All right.
And I just wanted to advocate that students, I mean, my freshman year was horrible for me. I never got involved. I was getting poor grades. After I got involved with a lot of student organizations, I actually went to the counseling center where Joe works, and they helped me a lot. And just using campus services, getting involved in campus, making friends, using positive role models to actually as examples in your life to kind of follow by will lead to success, and has in my life. I just wanted to say that.
That's great, Nick. And where will you go when you're out? Do you know yet?
Right now I'm looking at master's degree programs in public policy.
Great.
Then that, hopefully, a job somewhere.
So your advice worked there. That must feel good, Joe. Get involved. He did. It worked.
Yes. That is really neat. It's neat to hear that. We find that students who have an on-campus job do better academically than those who don't have an on-campus job. Students who utilize services, whether that's tutoring or their academic advisor, faculty, the career services office. If they use those services, they will do better academically than students who don't. It's ability is not everything. It has a lot to do with how you manage yourself and your time and how you use resources.
Right. Thank you so much, Nick, for the call. Here's an email from Gretchen in Oshkosh. We have a lot of Oshkosh listeners today. How do we know when the children have enough ambition to make this work on their own? When I went to college, my dad hardly knew I was leaving. I did the process completely on my own, right down to getting loans. I'm trying to get my son to take on some of this responsibility, but he's not. Friends are saying the same thing about their kids. Any thoughts?
I think that is a challenging situation that a lot of parents are facing. And ideally, it's something that we should be starting as young as possible as children are growing up, trying to shift as much responsibility and consequences to them as they're growing up as we can. So if it's in high school, you didn't turn in the form or you didn't bring the book home, what are you going to do about that and what are the consequences going to be? So allowing some of those natural and logical consequences to come from those, you know, that failure to take care of things, I think that that's an important part of growing up. Then when you get to the college age, I think that trying to create that expectation as clearly and openly as you can with the student that they need to take on responsibility and take care of things as part of the agreement with your help. In some ways, we have a lot of merit-based scholarships. You have to maintain a certain GPA, you have to maintain certain kinds of activities and so on to maintain your scholarship. Sometimes I wonder if parents' help shouldn't be merit-based as well. I will help you. I've got, you know, this ability to assist financially, you know, this ability to co-sign loans, these kinds of things, and I will do that. But I'm not just paying for you to, you know, go and goof off and not perform well. So again, tying consequences into behavior is probably an important thing to do.
Right. Let's talk a little bit more about parents. I think that we don't know how present we should be, and we may not be very present. Our students may be very, very far away. Mm-hmm. Is it comforting for their children to receive emails? Do you want to be on the phone? Should you visit? Are there any kinds of rules about that? What's infringing on their developmental growth?
Well, I think really what's right for any given student is going to vary from family to family, and the different personalities of, if you have different children, they all have different personalities and may want different things in terms of contact and the sort of contact and that kind of thing. A lot of parents are saying now that texting is a good way to get a response. If you text,
right.
You'll get
right.
A response,
no.
Right?
Yes.
Sometimes if you call, it for one reason or another may not be picked up. But texting, calling is very good. I really like it, and I hear from students that they enjoy it when their parents come to visit. That's kind of a neat thing if a student is living on campus. To come and visit the campus and spend some time with them here, because it gives them that dose of home, and it gives, frankly, the family and parents that opportunity to say, okay, everything's all right. I don't have to worry quite so much. But it doesn't take the student out of the campus environment. Visits home, there are people who, you know, sometimes try to set rules about that, you know, don't come home for the first 6 weeks and that kind of thing. What I encourage is to probably minimize going home so that you use that time to invest on the campus.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're a commuting student or a residential student, if you're always gone and always maintaining the connections with your high school friends, you're really not getting connected on campus. And it's that, in that, particularly in the beginning of school, maybe you have to push yourself a little bit. You have to take that chance to get involved. And there are some great ways to get involved. It's hard for any of us, I think, to sort of walk up and just start a conversation. But if you're involved on an intramural team, or if you're in a club or organization, or if you're at the fitness facility, after class, before class, that gives you a venue for interacting with people. And I think that's probably the most important thing.
Rhoda from Wausau, hi.
Hi, Kathleen. Great to hear your show again.
Thanks, Rhoda.
I had some really good advice excuse me, from one from a freshman counselor before I actually had registered down in Madison, and I was going into nursing, and he told me, you're going to be just swamped with nursing and science those last 2 years, so in your freshman, sophomore years, take all those electives on anything that that suits your fancy. So I really did that and got into philosophy and art history and music appreciation, and all of those things have come up in my life now and then. It is, it was really nice to have those things.
That's good advice.
And my mother was sort of along the lines, although she said, see if you can't get into things that you haven't had a chance to in high school. And she was talking about other cultures. And so I was a big sister to a Fordham student.
Hmm.
And my dad was a little more earthy. He told me and scandalized my mother that I ought to go out and get drunk with my girlfriends.
Oh!
So that I would know how stupid and dumb and out of control I would be.
Oh.
So that I would never do it again. But he said something about an aspen between my knees, but I won't talk about that.
Oh! What do you think of that advice? Well, you got to go out and get drunk so you know how stupid it is, and then you won't do it again.
Well, sometimes we learn things the easy way, and sometimes we learn things the hard way, I suppose.
Right.
But it's some great advice in terms of getting involved with different classes. I tell high school students that you may have had just a couple of biology classes in high school. We have a whole department of biology and a whole department of chemistry and philosophy. So you have so many opportunities for different experiences academically and intellectually. The variety is really amazing. And so finding things that you really connect with, even if it's a little bit more difficult, challenge yourself. Get yourself involved in some classes that you might not have had the opportunity to learn much about.
Right.
I think doing that gets you more involved and more invested. Rhoda also mentioned study abroad opportunities, which I think is a great opportunity for students. If they can go abroad for a semester, they will return to the United States, return to Wisconsin, and have a much better appreciation for how things are here culturally. I think it's being out of your own culture that gives you some real appreciation for an understanding of the culture you have and the diversity of the world. Taking that opportunity is a really positive one. There's also a national student exchange program that many colleges and universities participate in, where you can pay the tuition of your present institution, the institution you're going to, but study. Take a semester of classes at some place in the United States. So you can go to Florida or San Diego or Hawaii and study there for a semester, and pay your local tuition and learn something from that school that you may not have the opportunity to study at your present school, or just to learn how things are different in a different part of the country.
Yeah, that's a great idea. I'm not sure about study in Hawaii. I don't know if I'd be able to discipline myself enough to study anything in Hawaii.
Right.
Other than the ocean and the mountains and all of that. Thanks, Rhoda, so much for your call. We have some lines open now if you'd like to join our conversation. Our guest this hour is Joe Abhold. He is director of University Counseling Center at the University of Wisconsin Oshkosh. And we're talking about, we're coming toward the time of year when college students are going to be going away for college, or maybe they're living at home, but they're going off to college, and we're trying to help them thrive in the new university environment. How to do that? How can you stay safe? How do you stay sober? How do you engage yourself in rigorous intellectual activity? How do you stay involved? All of those concerns that parents have and college students have as well. And Joe thought it would be a good idea, and I agree. And we've had some great calls of advice from students who have already gone through their first year in college, and from parents. What mistakes did you make? What did you do that was really smart, either as a parent or as a student? Here's the phone number. Lines are open at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. 855. We have many emails that we will get to as well with Joe here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Let's take a couple emails, Joe. Email from Kay in East Troy. The advice I wish I'd been given and which I tell my high school students today is, number one, don't worry about what you're going to major in now. Just get the degree. There are many more jobs and opportunities open to you when you have that piece of paper. And number two, in the college search, don't exclude private schools because of their price tag. Private colleges have more financial aid to give and in many cases can offer packages which are as good as or better than public universities.
Well, we have a wealth of resources and a wealth of choices in Wisconsin for higher education. We have 23 campuses in the UW system and something like 20 private colleges in the state of Wisconsin. So there are a lot of choices, and I think students should go to the campuses and experience a little bit of the life there. And oftentimes students will say, and families will say, you know, we walked around and it just really felt right. It felt right to me in terms of the people I met, or there's something about it that really worked for me. So I think visiting and experiencing that is really important part of making that choice. The same thing really goes for a major. I agree that students shouldn't be panicked about deciding on a major. At the same time, I think they should also be doing things to experience different academic courses and what it's like in doing academic work in different majors or different areas. They should also be exploring the world of work by doing job shadowing, by volunteering, by doing informational interviews, talking to people in different occupations and finding out what their day is like and those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
So while you shouldn't panic about it, I think that you should continue to stay thoughtful about it and spend time really exploring and looking and studying. In some ways, that's a job all of its own, figuring out what is my course in life, what's my direction going to be.
We go to Ryan from Oconomowoc. Hi, Ryan.
Hi, how are you doing?
All right, you?
Good. I just want to have a comment on how I think parents can help out a little bit. So oftentimes, we focus so much on the student and how they should deal with it. Sometimes it comes in hand in how the are raised. If they're having it modeled at home, how to manage their time, how to manage their money, they're going to do just fine in college. So oftentimes today, parents just hand things to their children, and they're not learning any sense of responsibility. They think, oh, it's just mom and dad's money. I can do whatever I want with it. And that's going to reflect in college, too, where if mom and dad pay for college, well, it's not my money I'm spending if I, you know, horse around and don't do anything academically. It's mom and dad will pay for it. Where if it's the child's own money, well, there's a little more sense of responsibility. It's saying, oh, I've got to get my stuff done because I'm spending my money. I'm investing my money, and if I blow it, it's out of my pocket. And I think oftentimes we forget that today.
Joe?
I think that's great advice, and I can see it happening all the time where, you know, mom and dad, will you buy this for me? That's a very easy request, and that's a very easy thing to say, but when the response is, well, you have some money, do you want to buy that? It becomes a whole different decision-making process then, and tying in that responsibility throughout a child growing up, I think, can be a helpful thing, and maintaining that in the same way at college. Sometimes it feels like, oh, this is, I've got my loans, and I've got this, and I've got that. You know, students may not be thinking about how serious this is, and they can sometimes kind of goof off. But I think the more focused they are that this time and my time and money is very important here, they'll do better. Another thing that's really important, a few callers have mentioned sort of the first year being a bit of a challenge or a time when they may be goofed off. Getting behind the eight ball in that first year of college can really be difficult to overcome. If a student gets isn't on task and gets a 2.0, it can take a couple of years to get back a strong GPA after doing that. So that first year, that transition year, is a really important time.
Thank you, Brian, so much for your call. Let's go to another email from Catherine. My daughter has a lot of medical issues. She missed her second semester of her junior year. She'll be a senior this year. She previously missed most of her middle school years. Even still, she has a 4.0 and an ACT of 33. She needs and wants to go to college, but we're all worried about how to help her be successful. How do we approach a college about meeting some of her needs without being perceived as helicopter parents?
Well, I think that that's a really great question, and one that parents face with respect to students with chronic health conditions or a past history of mental health concerns or those kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it goes to using those resources. I would suggest that when they're looking at campuses, that they look at the student health center, facilities and resources available on those campuses, and select those with good on-campus resources. And then, prior to starting school, ensure that Catherine's daughter or Catherine and her daughter go and pay a visit to the health center, and they can provide history, medical history, and documentation, and that transition sort of information, so that health center is in the best position possible to provide appropriate care. The other really worthwhile thing that does is it helps the college student feel comfortable with the people there.
Right.
If you've met with someone, it makes it a whole lot easier when the need arises to go in and talk with them and get your needs met. Campuses, the vast majority of campuses in the state, have student health center facilities that are excellent accredited physicians and nurse practitioners who provide medical care. They don't necessarily replace the family doctor or the specialist in the case of someone with a chronic health condition, but they can work very closely with them to help that student maintain their health and get their health care needs met as appropriate on campus to help them be successful. And I think a student like that, with that kind of ACT and that background of having overcome adversity, is probably going to do just great.
Yes. The grades are unbelievable in the ACT score.
Mm-hmm.
She's going to be okay. Carol in Plymouth, hi.
Hi. I graduated from a liberal arts college in Wisconsin, took a guidance and counseling class from summer school at UW, and that helped me hugely in many ways, but in the taking a test for placement and or I forget the exact name of it, but what do you want to do? What are you good at? What do you like
mm-hmm.
to do?
Mm-hmm.
And that was super. And also, I'd like to just ditto the fellow a couple of calls ago about finance. I think we ought to be, I'd love it if Kathleen would do a show on what we're teaching children in school about planning for their future financially, because I think it's next to zip.
Yeah, that's a good idea for a show.
Taking a class or taking tests and that type of thing to help you figure out where you want to go and what you want to do can be a very helpful thing. It's another part of the formula or part of the resources available to students to figure out their direction. There's a great resource available online called WISC Careers, and people can log into that.
Oh, what is that again, Joe? WISC?
WISC Careers, WISC.
Okay.
Careers.
Okay.
And it will give some self-assessments, interests, abilities, that type of thing, and then you can explore different areas of the world of work on that site.
Oh, that's great.
It is.
Good. How do you deal with, and maybe we'll do something about separation later, but just a word of advice for parents, because I fall into this category, I think. You know, I was on vacation for 2 weeks in a beautiful spot, and my son, who people know is going to college this year, said to me, Mom, it's 29 days or something now, and I'm going to be leaving. And all of a sudden, I just started sobbing. I was just crying, and I realized, oh, my gosh, this is probably not the proper thing to do. Nor did I think I would have that kind of reaction, because there is a sense of excitement about having your child be able to go to college. And yet I thought, oh, my gosh, this means something. That I'm I'm crying now.
Right. Of course. Of course it's both, isn't it? We're both very excited, but very sad that the way things were aren't going to be anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Things are going to be different, and that relationship is going to be evolving, and this you know, this person that you've had around for quite a long time isn't going to be there.
Right.
A lot of us have very friendly, positive relationships with our kids, and it's very hard to see them go. And I don't think that you can really successfully deny that. You know, if you're having those feelings, they're going to know it. And I think it's appropriate to let them know that it's hard for you. And it's probably, in a lot of cases, harder for the parent than it is for the student.
Mm-hmm.
And that's okay, too. To let them know that is makes a lot of sense. But try not to sort of put it on them.
Right.
And all of
right.
your fears and all of your anxieties and whatnot, try not to project that too much onto them and recognize that they have generally made good choices and that they're able to take care of things and try to give them that support. You know,
mm-hmm.
they say that the two best bequests we can give our children is the gift of roots and the gift of wings.
Yes, the gift of wings. How true.
You're giving them both.
How true. Here's another email that has come in. Well, there are a lot of them. We won't get to all of them, but we'll get to many. Here we go. Wendy, I could relate to the guy who called in about slow bloomers. I was an average high school student, 2.65 grad, but it was easier to get into college in the early 70s. My 14-year-old son is like me, not like my husband, who was always driven. I keep telling my husband not to count him out because right now he does the bare minimum to get by. I dropped out my freshman year, worked for a year full-time, went back to UW-Milwaukee, and graduated with honors. It's never too late, she says.
Oh, of course it's never too late. I think it's important to point out that nationally, over 28% of college students are over the age of 25, entering college students.
My.
So there's a lot of people going to college for the first time or going back to college in their 20s and 30s and 40s. There's a significant number of folks doing that. And also, if you have a poor first semester or you're having a real difficult time, recognize that you can go back and repeat classes, that you can make changes and improve your performance.
Right.
And I think it's important never to count anyone out. There are a lot of high school students who are sort of born-again students once they hit college.
I like that phrase. Are you going to be a born-again student? Carol, thank you. Sarah in the car somewhere. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Thank you for allowing me to call. And I have a concern. I have kids in high school right now. One will be going to college in a couple of years. There is such a push starting in middle school about college already. And if your child isn't taking all the enhancement courses, it's kind of, oh, that's too bad. Like, there's something wrong. And all these kids are expected to be at the top of everything. Just huge expectations. And it seems to have become, for many kids, what their parents want. And number one, how does that transition? Do you see effects of that at college? And number two, are there services to help kids have a conversation with their parents if they get to college and what their parents wanted them to do or what their parents maybe thought they wanted to do isn't what they want? And how do you help kids to approach that so their college years are really about what they would like their life to become? And I'm on the road, so I'll take comments off air. Thank you.
Thanks, Sarah.
Well, those are great questions. I do think that there's a lot of pressure in the middle school and high school for students to be taking advanced classes and to really be focused on, you know, talking about college and that kind of thing. And that's true on the one hand. On the other hand, they're trying to keep students focused on learning and giving them a reason to do well and to perform well and work their hardest in high school, which I think is an important thing to do. So we have some students who feel very pressured to you know, go to college and feel very stressed by that. And then we have others who are just sort of playing along, maybe sort of playing along with their parents and kind of treating college coming in maybe like the fifth year of high school. And that's a real concern. So that, again, it's a developmental issue, which I mentioned earlier, of this, the person taking that on and internalizing the hard work for themselves and the achievements for themselves rather than for other people. We work with students at the Counseling Center and folks at counseling centers around the state in higher education, work with students trying to find their direction as far as a major and career path is concerned. And we will coach students about how to speak with their parents if they want to make a change. Parents have, you know, legitimate, sometimes very legitimate concerns about, well, how are you going to earn a living with fill in the blank, right?
Right.
But it's trying to help people to understand that the world doesn't need another half-committed, you know, fill in the blank, some major that you think is going to be very employable. But the world can really use a passionate, invested student in one of these majors that we might think is less employable. So if a student is invested in their major and doing things, you know, taking an internship and getting a part-time job in that area and doing research with faculty, that type of thing, they're going to be much more successful, and ultimately they're going to end up being more marketable.
Right.
So I think finding that passion is a really important thing. And parents, again, sometimes have to work through what their hopes were, and that it's recognizing that it's not their life that their that their student is leading.
Joe, thank you. It's been just a very valuable hour. I appreciate your intelligence and manner. Thank you for being with us.
Thank you. It's been a lot of fun.
Our guest this hour, Joe Abhol, director of the University Counseling Center at the University of Wisconsin, Oshkosh. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios. Thanks, everybody, for all of your calls and for listening. We'll be with you tomorrow at 9:00.